Yo, what's up? Welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and it's Friday, and it's ITT Sound Off. And Maria, you're not even in New York. You are in another country, literally.
I am very happy to be visiting my mom.
Nice.
In Mexico, outside of Tepoztlán. We'll talk about that later, but if I sound a little bit strange or giddy, that might be it, because I've been out of the United States for almost an entire week, yo, and it feels good. All right, here's our first topic. Oh my God. Oh yeah, man, this is really silly, y'all. This post-election bullshit that's happening.
Clown show.
Donald Trump has still not conceded the election to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. We're seeing what he's trying to do in terms of challenging the results in Wisconsin and Michigan.
Yep.
But then, of course, on Thursday in Georgia, the recount by hand was concluded. And guess what? Biden still won by 12,000 votes. I just remember Georgia.
Yeah.
Republican Georgia. Okay. Now, Friday, when we're recording this, the two top Republicans in the Michigan legislature, Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey and House Speaker Lee Chatfield, are expected to visit the White House, to visit with Trump. And in Michigan, there's also been these issues with certifying the votes, specifically in Wayne County, where Detroit is, after two Republican members of the county's board of canvassers voted against certifying. Okay, on Tuesday.
Yep.
They now have gone back and forth twice on whether they'll certify the votes there. Oh, okay. Let's listen to a moment from the board's virtual public forum on Tuesday night, where one community member, Ned Stabler, gave his comments.
You talked about not certifying Detroit, even though you acknowledged that Livonia, a city, by the way, I know you know is 95% white, had bigger variances than Detroit, which is 80% black. We understand, and you've now added your name. So I'm not going to try to change your mind. I just want to let you know that the Trump stink, the stain of racism that you, William Hartman, and Monica Palmer have just covered yourself in is going to follow you throughout history. Your grandchildren are going to think of you like Bull Connor or George Wallace. Monica Palmer and William Hartman will forever be known in southeastern Michigan as two racists who did something so unprecedented that they disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of black voters in the city of Detroit because they were ordered to. But just know when you try to sleep tonight that millions of people around the world now on Twitter know the name Monica Palmer and William Hartman as two people completely racist and without an understanding of what integrity means or a shred of human decency. You, the law isn't on your side. History won't be on your side. Your conscience will not be on your side. And Lord knows when you go to meet your maker, your soul is going to be very, very warm.
Whoa. Híjole, man.
Ned Stabler. Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yes. The big question now is that there's a whole kind of conversation of people saying, calm down. Everything is going to be fine. This election will go forward. Joe Biden will be inaugurated on January 20th. And then there are those of which I am a part of that are more circumspect.
Yeah.
Is it a coup? I think it is an attempted coup.
You do.
That's my feeling. This is an attempted. Will it succeed? Probably not.
Okay.
But it is an attempted coup and it will leave rasgos. What does that mean? Scars.
Why do you think it's an attempted coup? I'm just curious.
Because he is doing everything that he possibly can. He is lining up everything, things that we probably don't even know of, to try to stay in office.
Right.
And then on Thursday, Julio, the New York Times had this headline that said, Trump's attempts to basically not recognize the election are unparalleled in American history. Unparalleled.
Mm-hmm.
So I still believe that institutions are fallible.
Mm.
I mean, look around the world. They are fallible. And this man who was rallying with white supremacists and QAnon and the Proud Boys, you know, no. O sea, I am more circumspect. So you, Julio, you're like, no, it's all good?
No, I think, can I just quote what Benjamin Wittes said? Because I'm kind of that ilk.
Yes.
So Benjamin Wittes, who's a legal journalist for Lawfare, he knows the law.
Yeah.
This is what he said. It's like, to everyone flipping out on Twitter right now, stop, breathe, and let's go over what's going to happen. Tomorrow, which is Friday, the electoral result in Georgia will be certified. Monday, the results in Michigan and Pennsylvania will be certified. Arizona will follow in a week. Nevada and Wisconsin will certify on December 1st. The electors will cast their votes on December 14th. Congress will count those votes on January 6th. That is what's going to happen. All the rest is anti-democratic noise. So I think, you know, I've read a lot of this. Like Trump's bringing these people in, or this, or, you know, Giuliani with the dripping hair dye.
Oh, yeah, man, that I did see. What the fuck?
Yeah, he looked like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz with the oil. But here's the thing that I'll say. Even Republicans, legislators, if you look at these states and what's being reported, everyone's like, this is all bullshit. It's all bullshit. So I do think, like, yes, Trump is a sore loser. It's the most un-American thing. The guy lost, and it's just, I don't think it's a coup, but I think I'm concerned. But I kind of want to, you know, stay the course. Stay the course, Maria.
No, I understand, Julio, but you know what democracy is? It's all of us being wide awake.
Yeah.
It's all of us, you know, watching carefully. So I agree, and that's why we love you.
All right, well, thank you. So moving on to our second topic, we actually want to highlight a story that's been overshadowed by Trump talk, and that's a political crisis that's been happening in Peru. So on Tuesday, Peru swore in its third president in just over a week. Mm. So for people that haven't been following this, former President Martin Vizcarra was impeached and removed for corruption allegations, and his replacement, Manuel Merino, who was the head of Congress, caused all these mass protests and an uprising as people saw his takeover as a legislative coup. Now, that's a coup. What tried to happen in Peru.
Right. That's basically as if Nancy Pelosi just was suddenly named.
Like, I'm president. Yeah, exactly. So Merino resigned on Sunday after the deaths of two people during the protests. And he was finally replaced by Francisco Sagasti, who will lead the country until the next election in 2021. So a lot has gone down in a short time, but the unrest was a long time coming. And a reminder, Peru was also ravaged by the coronavirus pandemic. It actually has the third highest death rate per 100,000 people in the world.
Damn.
That's a country.
Damn.
And it's also in an economic crisis. Our fabulous producer, Noor Saudi. I love saying that. You know,
Noor.
She spoke to Ana Lucia Mosquera Rosado, who's a Peruvian activist and academic who has been on the ground during the protests. And this is what she said about what lies ahead for Peru.
We have, you know, a new president now. So he has a lot of challenges now because people is looking and actually asking for reforms. We are now talking about a reform of the constitution. People is talking about a new constitution and a new constitution that guarantees that everybody has the same rights and guarantees also equality and economic progress for everybody, redistribution, reduction of poverty, and the reduction of inequalities. And I think that's what we are looking forward now as a society, and especially because the people who fight the most are the most vulnerable. We've seen on the ground trans people, Black folks, queer folks fighting for a system that does not acknowledge them. So what I think we should do is actually talk about and think about the most vulnerable people and guarantee that they can exercise their citizenship fully.
It sounds like she's talking about the United States as well.
Interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Es que, Julio, what's happened in Peru compared to what's happening in the United States?
Yeah.
You know, it was legislative moves. It was this and that.
Yeah.
And the way in which we report about these things in other countries, the American press, if they put that same lens, this is what Lulu Garcia Navarro always says, if you put that same lens on the coverage of what's happening in the United States, it becomes more problematic.
That's a really good point. You just kind of floored me there for a second.
Oh, shit. That never happens.
No, but the point of what you said, the way the Peru story, even with the coverage, you know, Latino Rebels have been covering it. We just did a bilingual show.
Congratulations.
The first bilingual show, no translation, with two Peruvian journalists. So
thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it came out great. But I think the way you just framed that, Maria, just hit me, because now I'm kind of like, yeah, if we covered the United States like we're covering Peru, what does that mean?
Well, for example, and in the latest move, the U.S. president has decided to fire the person in charge of certifying the election. Meanwhile, he sent his lawyers to continue to challenge that. He's holding rallies. He's, you know,
as people take to the streets to protest.
People taking to the streets, protesters. I mean, no one was shot and killed, thank God.
Yeah.
But it has happened in the past. It could have happened. So again, I just also think it's important for the U.S. to understand. I mean, my brother, who I'm visiting to here in Mexico, he said, es que, I mean, I don't like using these terms because I don't really like the term, but he was like, the United States is just another third world country in terms of its democracy. Welcome to being a third world country, the United States, in terms of your democracy.
Yeah.
That's how it looks. And he's been living in Mexico now for over a year.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, deep. Also, Julio, we have to mention the tragedy of what's been happening in Central America. I'm so worried because one of the things that I have been feeling here in Mexico is that the nationalism, the Trumpism of Mexico for Mexicans is very real.
Yeah.
There will be more Central American refugees making their way north because of the hurricane in Nicaragua and massive storms and flooding.
Yeah.
So those are environmental refugees. And I'm just very concerned about what awaits them in Mexico because, of course, the president here, the leftist, has refused to recognize Joe Biden as the president. So shit's getting a little bit whack.
Yeah, and you mentioned Central America. And another story that seriously is not being reported as much as it should in the United States is Hurricane Iota, which it's done extensive damage across the region, leaving at least 26 people dead, according to ABC News. Nicaragua, you mentioned, was severely impacted, where there were at least 16 deaths. Even after the storm has passed, heavy rains are causing a lot of flooding and damage. Honduras was also affected by the hurricane and is still reeling from damage just a few weeks ago from Hurricane Eta. The devastation, heartbreaking. Tens of thousands were left with no water, over 100,000 people with no power. Climate refugees, you know, there's reason why people leave.
Exacto.
You know, you're absolutely right, Maria. And this should be another big story.
The number one story. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because people are going to say, oh my God, now there's a caravan coming. Oh my God, all these people, they're poor. It's like, no, they're environmental refugees.
Right.
The hurricanes are being caused by the fact that Americans in the United States consume too much fucking energy. Okay.
Okay, you good?
I'm sorry. It's all connected.
All right.
All right. Our final topic is a COVID-19 update.
Mm.
So I can't believe it, but the United States has surpassed Dr. Fauci's own estimates back in March that there would be 240,000 deaths. We've already had over 250,000 people killed by this virus, with many more expected as the disease continues to surge across the entire country. In the long term, it's weird because things are looking up. We've gotten this news from Pfizer and this week from Moderna, both developing, we hope, very successful vaccines, over 90% effective, should be available by the spring to most everyone. But, you know, that's a huge task. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's hopeful.
Yeah.
And this is exactly how the Atlantic's COVID tracking project put it. Understanding the pandemic this week requires grasping two thoughts at once. First, the United States has never been closer to defeating the pandemic.
Mm.
Second, some of the country's most agonizing days still lie ahead.
Mm.
So on Thursday, Joe Biden, president-elect, met virtually with members of the National Governors Association, that's Progress, their executive committee, which includes both Republican and Democratic governors, to discuss the steps ahead.
Yeah.
And this is what he said during a news conference after the call about the challenges with vaccine distribution.
The second thing there was uniform agreement on, delivering a safe and equitable and free vaccine. The governors all acknowledge that this will be a massive undertaking, one of the greatest operational challenges we will have faced as a nation. One statistic that was raised by the governors, it took 8 months to provide 100 million COVID tests. 8 months to provide COVID tests. Just imagine how much more difficult it will be, they pointed out, if we don't find a more efficient and effective way to provide 330 million vaccinations. Put it in perspective.
It's weird to be listening to a politician and you're like, I think he's probably telling the truth.
Yeah. Like, right? Wow. Actual empathy and understanding.
Just speaking straight up.
Exactly.
I mean, also, so on Thursday, the CDC gave their first coronavirus briefing since August, WTF. And here's what they were saying, advising people not to travel or to gather for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I know I just have to acknowledge, I did just travel. I traveled ahead of Thanksgiving because I did not want to be on a plane then.
Yeah, and a couple of things. The U.S., like, I think you're right. What Biden said, the way he framed it, also, personally, we're not traveling for Thanksgiving. Like, this is the first time, ready for this, since I was 7 years old, that I will not have Thanksgiving in New York.
Oh.
Okay? Seven.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, it was a moment. I had to, like, text my siblings and my mom. Yeah. And I was like, this isn't the right thing to do. We all said it. We're all going to do something in the spring and just create our own Thanksgiving. But Maria, I wanted to ask you, because you're in Mexico, and there was just news by the AP that Mexico announced that it passed the 100,000 mark in COVID-19 deaths on Thursday. And one of the things that I was reading from this story from the AP is that the assistant health secretary, Hugo López-Gatell, who is sort of the point man, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like he calls it like that the media in Mexico is being alarmist. And I'm quoting from the AP story. And that he says, the epidemic is terrible in itself. You don't have to add drama to it. So you're in Mexico. How's the mood out there? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I'm in an area that has actually done very well. Statistically, where I am, Cuautla, Huastepec, near Tepoztlán. I'm getting a chance to say all these really cool names.
I know, near
Cuernavaca, enjoy my Spanish. So this particular area has done quite well. Mm. And even so, I mean, I'm not going out, so I have not left the house except for once on Monday when my mother insisted that we had to go buy.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, Berta's buying poinsettias. All right, continue.
Right, for the house, Nochebuenas. But other than that, I have not left the house except to walk on the grounds. And what I see where I am is that a lot of people are wearing masks. So I think what you're seeing in Mexico is very similar to what you're seeing around the world, which is the most vulnerable,
right?
The people who cannot socially distance, the people who have to live 10 people crowded into a small place wherever, who have to go to work. Those are the people who are getting sick, who cannot get healthcare, and who, well, they can get healthcare, but they try not to until the very end. Es una cosa muy cultural.
Yeah.
Don't go to the hospital. In Mexico, it's like, no, no vayas al hospital porque te vas a morir. If you go to the hospital, you're going to die. So nobody goes to the hospital until the very end, and then they die. So it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Also, you know, there's a lot of obesity in Mexico. It's a huge issue. And obesity also is part of the problem for wealthy and poor. Very bad American eating habits and products, junk food. It's a big issue. Diabetes. So you're seeing the same structural issues. There is a sense, though, one of the, like, their Dr. Fauci is somebody who is very trusted.
The director of epidemiology, his name is José Luis Alomía Zegarra.
Right. But my mother, for example, no es que el doctor dijo. And so there is a lot of trust in him, like Fauci, and he is very science-based.
Yeah.
But it is political, because AMLO is ridiculously political, the president of Mexico.
All right, well, keep us posted.
And Julio, I just want to say I'm really sorry about your Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm feeling for you and for everybody. And I know this is so hard, but we just can't take the risk.
Yeah.
It's just getting too close.
Yeah.
So stay safe, everybody.
Yeah.
Wear your mask. Do everything that you can outdoors. And remember our elders. They are the most vulnerable. So good talking to you for this second international edition of In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really helps. You can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts on. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends. In the Thick is produced every week by the amazing team. Our now, yes, a new title, supervising producer, Nicole Rothwell.
Yes.
Noor Saudi and Harsha Nahata, with editorial support from Erica Dilde. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, Leah Shaw, Alicia YouTube, and Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Sophie Davis. And also, thanks to me for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and CCK Records. We'll see you on our next episode. Thank you for listening. Bye, guys. Bye, Julio. Love you. Adios, Mexico.
Stay thankful, people. In the Thick, November 20th. Sound off.
Maria Hinojosa in Mexico. International edition. In the Thick. Part 2.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media, or its employees.